Hi, this is Debbie Mayer in Hudson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today on the WGXC Morning Show, we're going to hear from Brandon Gaylord, Republican candidate in the 106th Assembly District election. That's a district that covers most of Columbia and Dutchess County in the New York State Legislature. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin has finished singing this song. Then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Network, network.
Turn out to Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th for drone performances from Greg Davis, Hudson's M. Geddes Gengris, Troy's Ben Saraton, and Jay Ashdown. They all perform drones at Saturdrone at Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org. and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC local news for Friday, November 4th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Patricia R. Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that Ulster County lawmakers are preparing to call on the county's Commission on Reapportionment to reconvene and create a district map that would meet legal requirements. Legislator Brian Cahill has introduced a resolution for consideration this month asking that the commission meet, quote, as soon as practicable, unquote, to redraw a legislative district map to meet the criteria under state and federal law. The measure is co-sponsored by seven other legislators. The resolution will be considered by the legislature's Ways and Means Committee when it meets on November 10th. If approved, it will go to the full legislature for consideration on November 15th. But even if the resolution is approved, it will likely have no effect since the legislature lacks the ability to compel the commission to meet. And commission members have already decided that short of a court order, they will not meet to create a new map, even though the one they submitted to the Board of Elections does not comport with state law. The commission created the map and submitted a final plan to the County Board of Elections in July. However, in September, County Attorney Clinton Johnson notified the commission that the map was illegal because it did not conform with the size parameters required by law. Johnson directed the commission to reconvene and redo the map to correct the error, but commission members are of the opinion that they cannot redraw the map without a court order directing them to do so. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman. TheUpstater.com is reporting that New York State police have received multiple calls on what is being called an imposter scam. The fraud usually involves someone calling and claiming to be from an entity such as law enforcement. The caller will claim to be an officer, possibly even using the real name of a local police officer, and they could use technology that displays the fake name or a number matching the police disguise on a caller ID. The caller will attempt to convince the person they are in violation of the law, having an outstanding warrant, or have a relative involved in an emergency, claiming that money is needed for fines, medical payments, or bail. The demand is for a large sum of money, and they direct that it be transferred in unusual ways without any face-to-face interaction with the caller. Scammers have been known to try more than once to get money from the same victim. Among the tips to protect against scams, take a pause. Verify any supposed emergency by calling friends and family before sending money, especially if the caller has warned not to do so. If the caller claims to be a bail bonds person, ask where the relative is being held and contact the facility directly. The caller claims to be a police officer, get the exact agency name, hang up, and call that department directly. Be suspicious of anyone who calls unexpectedly asking to be sent money. Additional information can be found at ftc.gov. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. Steve Hughes reports for the Times Union that the WAMC Northeast Public Radio Board is preparing to increase the base salary of its president and CEO, Alan Chartok, by more than $100,000, bringing his base compensation to approximately $350,000 a year. Chartok, 81, has been with the station for more than 40 years. When contacted by the paper, he claimed to not know the amount the proposed salary increase or how much he is currently paid. Chartok also questioned why the proposed raise was newsworthy. Quote, "I do think there was some sense that people in comparable jobs make much more money," unquote, he said. Quote, "That's what I was whispered to," unquote. As of June 30th, 2021, Chartok's base composition was $223,321, according to the station's most recent public filings with the IRS. WAMC last month raised more than $1 million as part of its most recent fundraising drive, the third time this year that listeners have contributed a seven-figure sum to the public broadcaster. Chartok said recently he had no intention of retiring anytime soon. Quote, "Until I decide and the board decides, I'm going to continue to do it, and I love what I do," unquote, he said. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
You like music?
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues right here on WGXC. The show is a monthly roundup of new offerings from the worlds of psych, indie, jangle pop, experimental music, and folk, bolstered with enough classic fodder to make them stick.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
Tune in to Crawl Out from the Fallout every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
How can you say no to that?
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, November 4th. Local early morning temperatures range from 32 degrees in Claryville to 53 in Tannersville. If you notice a bit of a difference in the way I'm reporting early morning temperatures, it's because I have switched over to the New York State Mesonet Direct Telemetry. So we're not going to get as many towns listed, but the data will be much more accurate. Snow falls today, 1,300 miles away near Pierre, South Dakota. Over here, we have a wonderful couple days in store as autumn seems to take a pause. A few clouds form today as the temperature rises to 70 degrees by 3 p.m. Overnight, the mercury dips to only 56 degrees. Then, tomorrow we'll have some stiff winds, but also a high of 73. Saturday night, winds get gusty and chances of rain enter the area. We will see a low of 63. Sunday, rain lingers, as do the winds, and we get a high of 73. Overnight, stays wet and the temperature dips to 59 degrees. Monday, it dries out and we get a high of 72. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12.02 a.m., low tide at 6.48 a.m., high tide at 12.44 p.m., and low tide, once again, at 7.13 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 5:34 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see a speedy plasma stream is already ramping up geomagnetic activity, pushing the Aurora Oval down through those Canadian territories. Solar wind speed is currently 557 kilometers per second at 11.1 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible until dark. AM radio might still work. Overnight, all frequencies will have fair conditions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 65. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lee Jameson of Stuyvesant, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
Wow! What a graduation!
I'll say!
But with college behind us, we'll need careers. And good ones.
What about chestnut roasting? People always need chestnuts.
Or begging! I know a place that'll saw your legs off.
Slow down, fellas. I've got a way we can keep our legs and still have a bright future.
Now you're dreaming.
Oh, am I?
Of course! Nuclear power!
It's the job of tomorrow. Today!
Really?
Well, that settles it. For all those reasons and more, let us choose an electrifying career in...
Nuclear power!
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Gun violence, the leading cause of death for children and teenagers. So be thinking about your younger brothers and sisters and what they face in these classrooms in El Paso right now.
Texas gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke is energizing college students against gun violence. From El Paso to Dallas, O'Rourke is criticizing Texas Governor Greg Abbott's failure to prevent more school shootings, such as the one in Uvalde. O'Rourke is also encouraging young voters to rally their families for early voting, which ends tomorrow in Texas. Early voters have already cast more than 32 million ballots nationwide.
I've always believed your generation, the 18 to 30-year generation, represents the best educated, most talented, least prejudiced, most generous generation in American history. And I really mean that. It is. That's why I'm so optimistic about the future.
In New Mexico, President Joe Biden promoted Democrats' efforts to cancel student debt for millions of Americans. Nearly 26 million people have already applied at studentaid.gov, but the relief plan has been hampered by lawsuits filed by Republican governors of several states hoping to end debt relief before it begins. In New York, where the race for governor is closer than Democrats ever expected, Hillary Clinton stumped for Governor Kathy Hochul.
She gets the fact that upstate New York really began the Industrial Revolution in America, fell on some hard times, and we have a chance to bring it back if we have Kathy Hochul as the governor working to do.
Clinton was joined by Vice President Kamala Harris at the event, meant to energize women voters to turn out for New York's first female governor. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer predicts Democrats will keep control of the Senate and possibly gain seats in the midterm elections. Recent polls have shown several key Senate races to be too close to call, including in Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, was released from the hospital after surviving a brutal home invasion. Republicans continue to tie the attack to crime across the country. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene told a rally for former President Donald Trump in Iowa that Democrats care more about the border and Ukraine than they do about the U.S. southern border.
Paul Pelosi was brutally attacked by a drugged out illegal alien that should have been deported. And Paul Pelosi should have been a gun owner and shot his attacker.
Finally, the White House says U.S. embassy officials in Russia met with imprisoned WNBA star Brittany Griner, who was sentenced to 9.5 years in prison for bringing less than a gram of illegal cannabis oil into the country in February. A Russian court rejected Griner's appeal of her sentence last week. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. A quote attributed to Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels says, "If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it." Polling just released by the Pew Research Center confirms just before the 2022 midterm election that an alarming number of voters have low confidence in our election system. In October 2018, Pew polling showed that 87% of voters supporting GOP congressional candidates thought the 2018 midterm would be conducted very well or somewhat well. In 2020, that number dropped to just 50% of GOP voters. Now, 2 years after the big lie and the January 6th committee revelations, that number has improved just 6 points to 56%. When asked in 2020 whether their in-person votes would be counted accurately, 92% of GOP voters said they were very or somewhat confident. In 2022, that number dropped to 79%, with very confident dropping from 48% to just 26%. But that confidence drops even further with the counting of absentee and mail-in ballots, and that hasn't changed much from 2020 to 2022. Just 37% of GOP supporting voters are very or somewhat confident that mail ballots will be counted accurately in 2022, compared to 36% in 2020. We have links to the poll and credible sources showing the American election system is safe, accurate, and secure at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
And I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and we are joined via Zoom with Brandon Gaylord running for the 106th Assembly District. Is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Whoops, let's see. You're a little too loud in the board. I think you're okay now. The 106th Assembly District is it all of Columbia County and some of Dutchess County, or what is the district?
It's most. It's Columbia County minus the town of Ghent, Kinderhook, Stuyvesant, and Stockport.
And some of Dutchess County too, right?
Yeah, most of Dutchess County. It goes all the way down to town of Poughkeepsie, but on the west it misses Rhinebeck and Red Hook, and on the east it misses Amenia, Wissahick, and Dover. But then it goes all the way down to town of Poughkeepsie.
All right. So, Brandon Gaylord, why don't you introduce yourselves to voters who, people like me, have just seen your signs and don't know anything about you. So tell us why you're running, what your background is, and all that.
Sure. So thank you for having me on. So I'm not a politician. I'm a normal guy, school teacher up in Albany. I teach U.S. history. I'm raising my family with my wife in Chatham. We're both volunteer firefighters where we live, and we're very involved in our community. We love living in upstate New York, but we're finding that we're not.
Oops, you're cutting out again. It was all working until just a second ago. Let's see if, can you hear me? Yeah, we don't hear you again.
Yes, I can.
Now I can hear you again. Okay. So I think you were a volunteer firefighter was the last words we heard.
Okay, yeah. So my wife and I are both volunteer firefighters. I'm the chairman of the planning board in the town of Chatham, or in the village of Chatham where we live.
Oh, and there it goes again.
And I'm running for assembly because, again, New York State is a beautiful state.
All right. Better? No, it's breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
It's now I can hear you.
Hello.
Let's try it again. Yes.
Now you can hear me?
Now we can. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
We've got a gremlin somewhere inside there. Sorry about that.
It's the Russians, I'm sure. just sort of summarizing. So we're a normal couple, normal family, just raising our son in Chatham. I'm trying to make it work, but it's becoming too expensive to live here for us. And we didn't really want to move. We didn't really want to leave. So I figured I might as well run for politics, see if I can change things and make it more affordable for our family and others to live in upstate New York. We're not very partisan. We're not, card-carrying members of any political party. We're just normal people who care about our community and want to make it work for us and work for everybody. So that's why I'm running for assembly.
Why did you get on the planning board originally?
I got asked to. So our town is getting experiencing a shortage of younger people willing to do civic minded things in order to have a quorum on the planning board. So a lot of times if somebody was out of town, there was no quorum, there was no planning board, and a lot of the local processes got jammed up. And so I got asked, being sort of a gung-ho member of the community, to join. So I joined. It's been a lot of fun. It's given me a glimpse into sort of the inner workings a little bit, but that's why I joined.
I've been to some planning board meetings. I don't know if I'd say they were fun, but
it's all relative, I suppose.
What has the experience been? Have you learned about the community?
Yeah, I have. It's been interesting. There have been projects that are coming to Chatham in particular where I live that are really exciting. And then there are projects that have galvanized support from the community one way or the other. So I can think of in particular a motel that was planned that was not very popular. And so seeing people from all different walks of life come together and sort of exercise their rights was really, really sort of the fun part. And forgive me, Tom, I'm a U.S. history teacher by trade. So I guess it is fun for me just given that. It's been interesting to me to see the process. I sort of looked at things from afar, being a history teacher, reading about it in books and then sort of digesting that and teaching it to my students, but actually getting involved and holding plans and going through code books and finding violations or laws or whatever, and learning about historic districts and all that sort of stuff. It's been very interesting and sort of filled in a lot of those gaps for me. And has really made me very, very interested in politics in the sense of wanting to move things from A to B to make things better for everybody.
And then tell us about your decision to run for assembly this year, I guess.
Yeah, so decision to run for assembly, again, we're at the point where we're fortunate enough, my wife and I both have college education or graduate degrees. We have good paying jobs or decent paying jobs. I'm a teacher. And we're in the position where we could move to another state, given that we're taxed so heavily in New York that it move. State Senate was never something that really appealed to me. Assembly seems the most local without being that local, but while also being state politics. I'm a big believer in the idea of localism. I know Tom DePietro is as well, and we've had good conversations about this. The whole idea of giving back to your community is really valuable and important to me. And so I wanted to run for assembly, not because I looked at who's currently representing us and, you know, had some sort of negative connotations or thoughts. It was more of what's happening isn't working for my family, and I think that I can do a better job, and let me get in there and see if I can improve things.
So this is less about Dede Barrett and more about the state of New York, the state of the state of New York.
That's correct. Yeah. And you know, I think one thing that should give voters a little bit of solace is that I think our race, and I'm going to speak for my opponent a little bit, has been a very, a race that's focused on the issues. There are races across the state where it's, you know, vote for me because my opponent is, some ad hominem attack. And then it just gets kind of ugly. And so I don't look at Dede Barrett and then say, because she exists in that position, I'm going to run against her. I look at it and say, who's making these decisions? It's not really working for us. What's going on there? And, you know, I reached out to her, didn't get a response. And I thought, you know what, that's not the way things should work. I bet I can do a better job. And so that's what prompted this.
It's interesting because I think just from our few moments talking here, you seem to be would you describe yourself as a moderate Republican?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm a firm believer in is that there's a division that exists, and I've spoken to a number of people about this. There's a division that exists in our current zeitgeist that really infuriates me. This idea of when I knock at the door and I've got ideas that maybe don't work for everybody, but they work for some, and I really want to have conversations with people. And people sometimes will shut me down and say, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? I say, it doesn't matter. Can we talk about the issues and sort of see if there's some common ground? We may not agree on them, and that's fine, but can we have a conversation? And so I find myself sort of bridging that Democrat-Republican divide because I recognize that the more we race to our respective camps, the more we're going to stand divided. Somebody's profiting off that. Somebody stands to gain from us being divided. And what I want to do is say, we may not agree on every issue, and that's okay. But if we can agree that it's getting too expensive to live in New York, and in a lot of places, it's getting too dangerous, and those two things need to be addressed, if we can agree on that, then we can start to improve our state and address the other issues, you know, at a later time. But we need to come together. We have to start healing our communities because they're incredibly fractured and divided.
So that answers my question perfectly. And what I was leading to was your election seems like one of the few elections where there's basically two moderate candidates from the party. We thought Dede Barrett was going to be primaried. There's already Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson is talking about primarying her in the next election already. And there were protests from the left at her office in the past year over the clean slate issue. I think maybe affordable housing. But this is one of the few races. I mean, more of the races are two people on the extreme or farther from the middle. But you guys are both fairly closer in the middle than most other elections this fall.
Yeah, I would say, I'm certainly biased. I think I'm more in the middle than she is, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. And certainly to be expected, right? But look, the thing I would say is in the last 16 years, this district has had two different people represent them. It had Molinaro represent them for 6 years. It's had Dede Barrett for 10. I don't plan on being in office nearly as long as my opponent currently is in office. I believe in term limits. I believe we need to make the state more affordable. I believe we need to make it safer. I think those three issues push me pretty far toward the middle in some respects. And I think my opponents, I'm assuming opposite viewpoint on those, push her further to one side. And I hope the voters see that.
Yeah. So term limits, you are in favor of voters not being able to have a choice.
I'm in favor of of dollars from state committees, not from individuals, for my reelection efforts. And incumbency rate for Congress, for example, which I'm not running for, is 95%. Incumbency rate for any race is significantly higher than it is for the challenger. And so once you're in, there's an inherent built-in advantage, whether it's funding, name recognition, the fact that Dee Dee Barrett can go to any event, call the press and say, hey, I'm going to give a short little speech. Would you like to be here? And the press will gladly jump at it. I can do the same. And the press will say, who are you and what? Why are you calling? And so there's a built-in advantage. I don't believe that it's denying voters anything. I think that at a certain point, you look at people who have been in the assembly longer than I've been alive and you say, okay, maybe we need to change things up. And maybe we need to ask people to step down the way that George Washington did. I mean, it's only, you know, a good example that we have passed down from our founding 250 years ago.
Yeah, I guess the question is if in 2026 a voter wants to vote for Brandon Gaylord and term limits say Brandon Gaylord can't run, that is denying the voter's wish. That's what my point was.
Yeah, and I guess when I say term limits, what I would be more in favor of is the actual candidate stepping down. What I see all too often is members of the Assembly or State Senate. Like I said, who have been there for, you know, I'm 36. I know there are people who have been there 40 plus years. And at 40 plus years, you've got such an incumbency advantage that I would argue the voters are not given a fair shot at electing somebody who has fresh and new ideas with the same opportunity and outcome that they can expect simply by virtue of you being an incumbent. You know, my opponent typically gets anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million given to her by the state committee, which, you know, good for her, but they do that typically because she's a known quantity. They can put her on TV and people typically know her. And I would argue that that stifles ideas from the left. If you want Mayor Kamal Johnson to run for assembly, you should be in favor of Dee Dee Barrett saying, you know what, I do believe in term limits and I'm going to step down. By not doing that, she's only limiting somebody who's got potentially the ambition to run for that seat.
So you're talking more about the Chris Gibson model of term limits, term limiting yourself rather than the government mandating that you can't vote for this certain candidate.
Yeah, and Tom, thank you for clarifying that. Absolutely. I'm much more libertarian than my original answer sounded in all respects.
Yeah. And I don't mean to hijack because term limits, I was looking at your issues pages among the major issues. So I'd like you to speak to what you think are the major issues in this campaign.
Yeah. So major issues, rising cost of living is number one. You can just generalize it as the economy. I talk to people every single day. I've knocked on probably 14,000 doors at this point. Republicans and Democrats alike are telling me that the economy is the number one issue. I hear all the time, good luck to you, but we're moving. We're heading to the Carolinas or wherever else. People can't afford in a lot of places to heat their homes. In Columbia County, that's becoming more and more true, especially if you are lower income, you heat your home with kerosene. In Dutchess County, people can't afford their electric bills. Central Hudson is charging people in some places $900 a month or higher for their electric bill. And it's just, I mean, and wages are stagnant, right? If everybody's making $1 million a year, maybe we celebrate. But the fact that wages are more or less stagnant while costs are going up is creating a real big problem. So the economy is number one, and then crime is number two. And those two are by far the biggest issues.
And let's go through, though, I guess one at a time. What can someone in the state assembly do about inflation, which is worldwide after the pandemic? Almost every country in the world has, you know, a much larger inflation than it usually does. So what can someone in the minority in the assembly do about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. We need to actually start pushing back against an ever-increasing budget. So our state budget is more than double the size of Florida's state budget, and they have 2 million more residents than us. There's no reason why New York government needs to be taking as much money as it does. I just was speaking to somebody else in an interview before this, and I said, you know, we lose every year more residents than any other state in the country except California. Our net migration is greater than any other state except California. And yet our budget keeps increasing. And so those of us who stay are contributing to a bigger and bigger pie in terms of tax dollars, which means that we keep less and less in terms of real dollars. So we've got to start bringing spending under control. It just has to happen. And in the minority, you know, it's going to be tough being realistic. If I had the magic wand and I could do whatever I want, it'd be very easy. But in the minority, you have to get creative. And so I think one way to do this is tax breaks for first responders, which I'm very much in favor for. Our first responders obviously are hit tremendously hard during COVID and then, you know, before COVID and since COVID. And a lot of our small towns in the 106th district are made up of volunteer fire, part-time police, part-time EMS. And as soon as those people especially start leaving those communities, it's going to be disastrous for those areas. So
that EMS crisis
tax break for those people rather than the $200. The EMS crisis
is already here, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I'm volunteer fire. And I can tell you what happens with fire, at least, and this is true with other departments, is that when we start closing them and when we have a crisis like we do with EMS, you start having to rely on mutual aid, meaning they come from further and further away. So that means that if you're, I don't know, exposed to something like fentanyl or whatever, or you just have a regular EMS issue, you might be waiting minutes longer than you should be, 5 or 10 minutes, which can make the difference. Especially in an emergency. A fire doubles in size every 30 seconds. So if you're waiting an extra 5 minutes for the fire department to get there, that's the difference between your house being saved and your house being gone. And so that would be one way to start to bring down the cost. And then it's just a matter of public pushback against raising the rates that everyday New Yorkers are paying for their taxes.
So are there specific things that Albany should have voted on in the past legislature session that could have helped citizens now?
You know, not that I'm satisfied with. I mean, there are tax credits that could be done. There's a, I'd say the only exception to that is there's a veterans property tax exemption that is a 100% property tax exemption for fully disabled veterans, which I've never spoken to anybody who said that wasn't a great Senate. It's been tabled in the assembly, so it hasn't gone anywhere. That's something that I would like to see move forward. You know, how many veterans is that going to impact? Probably not that many, but I think it's a good step in the right direction, and it's something that I would like to see move forward. Veterans is another issue where we really don't do enough in this state. I think we're one of the lowest, maybe even the lowest state in terms of our population being veterans. In terms of raw numbers, we have a lot, but in terms of the percentage of our population, veterans are choosing to live anywhere other than New York, and that's a shame.
And then you said crime was your second major issue. What would you want to do about that?
The bail reform that was implemented was perhaps, and this is me being in the middle, Tom, was perhaps well-intentioned. And I've spoken to a number of public defenders who have said, you know, if you get arrested and you have to languish in jail for a year or longer while you wait for your trial, that's obviously unfair and not good. And I agree. But what's happening now is sort of the exact opposite. Nobody's staying in jail. And so you've got communities that are being terrorized across the state. I'm doing this interview in the town of Poughkeepsie right now. And just a couple of weeks ago, right up the road at Marist, or right near Marist, father was visiting his son at college and walking down the hotel lobby, and some guy hopped up on drugs who should not have been out of jail, fires 30 rounds and executes this man just broad daylight. And that was that. And so crime is really starting to come into our communities quicker than I think a lot of people realize. And so again, bail reform, probably good intention, but misses the mark. Judges need to have judicial discretion to be able to lock people up and not offer them bail if they don't want to.
Yeah, I would push back and say it's not true that no one is being held, because there are still people getting bail. But New York is the only state in the country that doesn't have the judicial discretion to hold someone because of safety issues. I think I'm wording that wrong, but I'm surprised to hear a Republican say that they are in favor of holding someone in jail who is innocent, because you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And so these people who are getting bail or not getting bail are considered innocent by the courts.
What I'm hearing from, so I didn't say I wanted people held who were innocent. What I'm saying is what we're doing now is we've stripped judges, and this is coming from a public defender friend of mine in Rensselaer County. We've stripped, we'll get arrested, and unless it's an extremely serious offense, they get let right out. So murder and all these other things, right? You're not getting bailed, right? But a lot of these sort of lower level and even mid-level, I would argue mid-level crimes, people are getting let right out. And so there are people who are committing crimes in places like the city who are saying thank you to the bail reform laws. And there are stories, I think, in the New York Post about this. It's certainly not making any communities any safer. You can argue sort of from the libertarian ACLU standpoint that bail reform is probably well-intentioned, which I agree it was. But I think what we need to do is we need to empower judges to be able to exercise judicial discretion to say, this is the first offense for this person. I don't know that bail is really necessary. They can be released on their own recognizance, or this person is a career, violator of these laws. We need to actually exercise some discretion here and set bail for them. And judges don't have that ability right now. And I think that's a problem.
So I'll ask the question again, because I think you gave a great answer about what the issues are, but sure. I'm asking about if these people that you're talking about are innocent. They are considered innocent by the courts. They are not mm-hmm. guilty because they have not been found guilty yet. So mm-hmm. you're talking about putting people in jails who are innocent, considered innocent by the court, and that seems not to be a normal value that Republicans used to hold.
I think that what used to be the case was that you used to rely on the case that police and detectives made, and then you used to be able to, society used to be able to expect people to be locked up until their trial, incarcerated in some sort of jail until their trial. That's not, by and large, happening anymore, at least not to the same extent. And I think that what's scary about that is that if everybody's going to be let go, if people are going to be arrested and let right out, we're relying on people who possibly committed these crimes, according to police, or maybe likely or probably or whatever it was, and it's certainly not proven yet. We're relying on them to come back for their scheduled court date and hope that they show up and don't commit any crimes in the interim. And I'm saying that what we've seen with the crime increases in New York City in particular are tragic. I mean, the people getting pushed on the subways, the people experiencing random acts of violence in New York City, I think speaks to the problems that are associated with bail reform. And like, I don't want anybody in jail who is innocent, right? And I think that that's a terrible, terrible thing. At the same time, what happened with bail reform is significantly worse than the individual here or there who gets incarcerated for a crime that they didn't commit. The discovery phase of judicial bail reform alone is disastrous and needs to be reformed. And so I think it's a touchy issue, but that's where I stand on it. Good question, Tom.
A couple other questions we always ask of people running for assembly or state senate. Would you bring a bill that mandates that all towns have some sort of web stream of their meetings?
Amen to that. Yes, sorry. Yes, I would. I'm a history teacher. I'm a nerd on the content by nature. So the more people have access to what's going on in their state and local government, the better. And so I would very much be in favor of that. And I would encourage everybody to tune in whenever they can.
All right. You've got some other issues on your website, which we should mention is BrandonGaylord.com. And that we're speaking to Brandon Gaylord, who's running for the 106th Assembly District. What other issues do you want to talk about?
Those are the big ones. I think that the thing I'd like to leave voters with is, look, I'm very much new to politics. Tom is very good with his questions, and I appreciate that. I respect that. I'm a normal guy. I'm a history teacher, just a family guy, just trying to make the state better for my family and for everybody else. I have no hidden agenda. I'm not looking to serve in the assembly for 10 years. I want to get in there and improve. So if you're able to support us at BrandonGaylor.com, please do so. And we've got 6 short days until this exciting election.
What have you learned? I guess you're knocking on doors, I assume, and like going to meetings and events and rallies. What have you learned from voters that you're surprised about?
Yeah, so I am. I'm surprised. Maybe not a great word. I love meeting people. I've met some fantastic people. This district has some amazing, amazing people. You know, I've also been surprised at how much just incredible beauty there is. I'm one of these guys who will pull over on Taconic at the rest stop, even though I drive Taconic every day, and I'll take photos around exit like 88 or 92 or wherever that is, around Ghent. I'm like falling in love with upstate New York every single day. Not to sound cliche or nerdy or whatever, but this district is just incredibly beautiful. And the people who live here are amazing. I was down at Schuyler Court, to people who have millions of dollars. I've spoken to people who are struggling to put food on the table and just everyone in between. And it's been tremendously fun, rewarding. Fun's not the right word, but rewarding. It's been very uplifting while at the same time, you know, being really tragic to hear people's struggles. And so it's just been overall a very spiritually filling existence to be able to run for assembly and talk to people. Cause I've talked to probably, like I said, about 14,000 doors I've knocked on at this point.
Boy, that's a lot of knocking. And walking and stuff. I wanted to ask about one issue that I didn't see on your website, which seems to be pretty important, that connective kind of to many issues is the lack of affordable housing. And, you know, you're talking about the cost of living going up, and it's pricing people out of living here, and often people that need to do jobs that don't get paid as much. And there's no incentive for developers. They are all busy building expensive houses and expensive apartment complexes and not affordable or workforce. And there's been a lot of more, market forces in the past years. There's a survey of buildings recently that said in Greene County, we actually have fewer buildings than we did 10 years ago. So there's definitely less housing if there's fewer structures. And then there's all these different points. There's not enough hotels, so there's more Airbnbs and more incentives for people to rent out their what they used to rent out as apartments to Airbnbs, and all that drives up the cost of living and the cost of housing for everyone. And then the pandemic happened, and a zillion people moved into this area and made everything that I just said much, much worse. So I don't know if this is more of a Chatham Planning Board question or a assembly question, but what should and what government organizations should try to work on this issue, or what would you like to do about affordable or workforce housing?
Yeah, great question. We bought our house in, not to make everyone jealous, but we bought our house in September 2019, like right before the pandemic hit. And then thank God we did, because 6 months later, we couldn't afford to buy our house had it been on the market then. Affordable housing is an issue I hear everywhere. I was in Hudson yesterday walking around. I was like, oh, there's a house for sale. It's really, really nice. It's $600,000. I can never afford it. And I looked at it and I went, you need $200,000. I mean, the houses that are for sale are not even at the list price of a house you could buy. You'd have to put so much money into it. And that's, you know, that's one city. I mean, Chatham, we have very few houses for sale. Same with everywhere else. One thing that I've noticed is that Hudson is doing some really cool innovations in terms of affordable housing. And that's something I'd like to see spread throughout the district. Hudson, Mayor Kamal Johnson's partnering with an organization that's also doing work in the town of Poughkeepsie. Sorry, they may be doing work in the city of Poughkeepsie. They're doing work in Poughkeepsie to bring affordable housing. It's great because it's not the stereotypical affordable housing. Like we've got Section 8 housing in Chatham, and but it's kind of like way out there, and you know, it's stigmatized. And this is going to be beautiful housing, mixed income, bike paths, really accessible, really clean, really nice. And it's going to actually bring people out of low income communities and put them in these mixed income communities, or give them the opportunity to. And it's going to elevate a lot of people's social standing. And that's what I'd like to see expanded. So I'd be very interested in working with both the mayor of Hudson, along with the developer, and bringing that model to other communities. From what I understand, just as a participant in that meeting, or an attendee in that meeting, the project is relying solely on grants. So Hudson's not having to fork over money. It's not raising anybody's taxes. It's a workable solution to a very real problem. And that's something I'd like to see expanded. I think we need to get creative. I'm not a big believer in government mandates or government being the solution. I'm a big believer in people getting creative to solve problems. And so that's something I'd like to see expanded throughout the district.
And they actually had a more traditional affordable housing proposal before that got shot down. So that goes to your point of that this model might be a little better. I guess the major ultra issue, if you're deciding to vote Republican or Democrat and not by individual candidates, which I'm not recommending or anything, but is that the Democrats currently hold a supermajority, and electing you might be the vote that ends the supermajority if you are defeat Dede Barrett. So Republicans would have a greater check on Democrats' one-party rule in Albany.
Yeah, I'm very honest. That thought had not even occurred to me. I'm a guy looking at our property taxes and our bills going, how the heck are we supposed to afford this? So I'm not even thinking like that. A vote for me is a vote for pragmatism, and a vote for a guy who cares about his community to just try to make it a little bit better. I'm not a party man. I'm a normal guy. I'm a teacher, volunteer, firefighter, and a father. So I know we're up against it. I didn't want to go long there.
No, that's good. We have a minute and a half, and I can fill in some of that, but I will give you any final word you want to say to voters.
Yeah, I'll just say that I've probably knocked doors in whatever community you live in. I'm out everywhere. I'm a normal guy. My palm card on the back has me, my wife, and our son. I'm very accessible, very approachable. I'm not an extremist in any respect. I'm willing to answer anybody's questions at any point. And my views are views that I hope reflect the values of the district, because that's who I am and that's what I care about. And I just want to improve things for everybody. So I just want to thank everybody for your support. Thank you for the kind words. This has been an incredible journey. I hope it doesn't end in 6 days. But thank you, everyone.
All right. You've been mostly in real time. There's been a couple words that were drawn out slowly in weird computer. But most, I think everyone heard most of what you said. So thank you, Brandon Gaylord, for joining us today. Running in the 106th Assembly District, voting is currently going on tomorrow. I think it ends right now today, but it's on tomorrow and Friday and Saturday and Sunday and then Tuesday.
Correct.
All right, that's our sound that we have to go, but thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.